looks like it's time to get started here. I'd like to welcome everybody to Simple Actions. It's a group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic and my name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And we have a triple whammy tonight because we are discussing steps 5, 6, and 7 tonight. And our panel is Harmony and Glenn. So let's welcome you to Glenn. And so what we do is we read a couple of paragraphs, or we read a paragraph or two, and then each panelist will share their experience on that reading or that step, and we will move on to the next paragraph. So let's see. Doesn't tell me what step 5 is on here. Let's see. You got it in your head?
Yeah.
That one. Yeah. What's step 5? Find it in the book. Okay. So we're on page, let's see, we got to find out what the damn step is. All right. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. We'll cover 6 and 7 to save further embarrassment. 6 is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And 7 is humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Now, with all that being said, we're going to start on page 72 in the book. And it says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now, these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. And being the gentleman that he is, Glenn has decided and volunteered to go first.
Yeah, that's how it works. Everybody knows that, too. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Glenn Mifflin.
Hey, Glenn.
Sobriety date, January 16th, 1995. I have a home group, Big Book Again, on Tuesday nights at 5:30 at Christ of St. Luke's. It's a Big Book study. It's a closed meeting, so we try to keep it dedicated to people that are suffering from this disease and not anything else. But anyway, I think it's kind of funny that in that first paragraph it says we're getting ready to cast all these bad things out of ourselves. I got a spoiler alert here. They don't all go away. Just to let you guys know, it's not like that idea that the obsession gets lifted out. The rest of them don't get lifted so easily because they're not nearly as bad as that obsession to drink was. So I had a real hard time with that idea that, you know, I did all the work and now they're just supposed to disappear. Not going to happen. Anyway, I did the fourth step, came up to the point where I had to face another human being. And it tells me in here that a solitary self-appraisal isn't enough, and that's absolutely true with me. Because it wasn't until I talked to somebody else. Now, getting it down on paper is a good thing, but until I talked to somebody else did it really solidify in my mind what was going on with me and the true nature of myself. And it also helped that the person I was talking to suffered from this disease as well and had been through the steps and had been through all the necessary preparation to listen to what I had to say, even though I put him to sleep halfway through. It was good to have somebody share his things back at me, you know, kind of reflect back the things that I was telling him so that I didn't feel that aloneness that I always felt when I had that stuff up in my head. But I became convinced early on that I didn't want to drink again. And when it tells me that if I don't do this, I'm destined to drink again. I believed it. That's why I went ahead and took care of the business of doing the inventory. That's why still today I take care of the business of doing the inventory, because even though I've done it, it doesn't mean that I'm through. I have to remember that. I'm never going to be through. I still have this stuff pop up from time to time. So I have to continue on with this process. And when I listen to somebody else's, I try to emulate what I was taught. I try to do it the same way. I try to make the individual that I'm talking to as comfortable as possible and let them know that I've been through exactly what they've been through, so that they don't feel like they have to hold back on anything. Because that was the one thing that my sponsor, well, the two sponsors I've had that I've done the inventories with, the complete inventories, expressed to me and made me comfortable with, was the fact that they had gone through and shared every deep, dark secret in their soul, and that I could do the same thing. And that was real important to be able to, you know, to have that in front of me and have that expressed to me. And like I said, it was entirely necessary that I did tell somebody else finally about myself. You know, what I had always held in, what I'd never tell anybody else. And the one thing that I've realized through this whole process is that there's nothing that I've done that's bad, that's so bad that I can't tell somebody. You know, it may be bad and big in my mind, but That's all it is. It's big and bad in my mind. The rest of it's just a matter of getting it on paper and getting it out to somebody. Nobody's run away screaming when I've told them the bad stuff. But I could have sworn before I started this process that that was what was going to happen. But it's not true, because all those things that I make up that way are little blocks that I throw up to keep me from doing what's necessary to recover from the hopeless state of mind and body. You know, that's what I do. You know, find ways to stop my progress. So it's really neat that AA kicks those blocks out of the way, because if I could ever hang on to one, that's all I'd need in order to go back the other direction. That's it.
Thanks.
I'm Harmony, I'm an alcoholic. I want to welcome you if you're new, and let you know that this is step 5. So hopefully by this time you have developed a relationship with a sponsor, someone that you trust, and that you will be ready to take that relationship to a new level and tell them some of your deepest, darkest secrets. I know that for me it was very scary, and those early months of sobriety was a lot of practice leading up to my fifth step, where I would call her every day, and then she would say things like, "Did you steal anything today?" And I would say, "No." She'd say, "Did you get to work on time?" And I would say, "No." So it was a lot of practice of letting her know those little things prior to getting to my fifth step. And I know that at that time, I felt pure humiliation. Anytime I had to tell her any one of those things, or anytime she busted me on what I was really doing, I felt so humiliated. And I wanted, my ego and my alcoholism wanted to avoid that feeling at any cost. And it wasn't that she was making me feel humiliated. And it was that I did not like the microscope on my actions. My disease did not want the microscope on my actions. I wanted to keep doing what I was doing without anybody's input. So that I could stay sick. And we're only as sick as our secrets. And that when reading this paragraph, that's what it stands out to me. My secrets are what's gonna kill me. I've seen it time and time again, sponsoring people. There's a couple of things that cause people to go out even after they've worked the steps, and that is big secrets. Big secrets that they don't want anybody to know, the sneaky stuff that they're doing that they're afraid to tell people, and they're afraid to get the consequences of. And I have those as well. There was a lot of things, especially in my first inventory, that I really did not want to tell my sponsor. There has been stuff in the last 10 years, there was a while there where I did not want to tell my sponsor what was going on in my house. You know, I did not want to fess up to the fact that like my husband is passed out on the couch. And my kids are running around in full diapers. Those are not things that I wanted to fess up to somebody. And there were things when I was very, the hardest ones to confess were the people that I mistreated, like the innocents, like the children or the animals, or old people, or the mentally ill, like things like that that I had done as a teenager or a child, or bullying or whatever it was. Like those things were really, really hard to tell my sponsor that I had done. And I can tell you that I was humbled by that experience. I was humbled by the fact that my sponsor accepted me exactly how I was, and that actually in AA, the sicker you are, the more people love you, just so you know. the better the story, and the more ugly stuff that you've done, the more love you get. So all of that fear that I had about admitting my human condition, admitting my faults, they were all just skeletons in the closet that needed the light shine on them. And once I did do that, then it became more and more okay for me to be myself in my life. And not only that, but recovery from the alcoholism, recovery from alcohol and having to pour alcohol on myself in order to be able to stand life on life's terms.
Thank you. We're going to move on to page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Glenn?
This idea of fear, I know we have a fear inventory in our process in step four. And I realized through that I lived in fear my whole life. And once I discovered alcohol, that was the solution to the fear that I felt. The only problem with that is that I couldn't stay drunk all the time until I got older. I don't know that it was okay, but I lived in that fantasy world where it was okay to do that. But early on, that fear went away for a little while, then it came back, and it went away and came back. I did live in a constant state of fear and tension. If I didn't know how things were going to turn out, I just worried about it. And most times I wouldn't follow through because I wasn't willing to take the chance on it being bad. The double life, it's really weird how I kind of buy into this idea that I presented a character for everybody to see because for a long time my work life defined me as far as I was concerned. I thought that was Glenn. You know, he was an engineer, he did a good job, he's work every day, never missed, yada, 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 bullshit. So anyway, when I went through the process of inventory, I realized that falsehood of a character was something I projected, that was still part of me. You know, that thing was still part of me. And I had to understand that even though it was a part of me, there were other pieces of me as well. Like that guy that acted like a 5-year-old afraid all the time. And that guy that would get mad because he was afraid and start bullying people. That guy that was sarcastic and would cut people up, you know, that kind of stuff. All those things are me. And I have to learn how to be okay with that. That doesn't mean it has to remain me, but I have to learn to be okay with those parts of me. And that's a long, drawn-out process for me. It's become a lifetime effort to learn who I am and what I am and to be okay with that. And that I do have the ability to ask for help with that and to make those changes that are necessary given the help that I get. Okay? So that double life, even though it's considered a stage character, it's still me. It's still part of me because I'm projecting something out there I want you to see. It's still me. It's me projecting things. It's me, you know, trying to get you to see certain things, but it's still me. And I was a real fortunate drunk. I learned early on how to drink into oblivion, and that's what I did most of the time, which means I was in a blackout most of the time. So I didn't have that fear of what I did. I didn't remember it. And I was of the belief that if I didn't remember it, it didn't happen, no matter what anybody said. And I lived in a time before cell phones and cameras on cell phones and stuff like that, so there was no proof of what I did most of the time. I did have one incident where I fell into an above ground pool standing next to it, but that was neither here nor there. But the idea that Yeah, I know. It's kind of hard to figure out. It's one of those things that's hard to wrap your head around, right? But I didn't remember these things. So, you know, you could tell me about it. You know, my wife used to, you know, go through a play-by-play of what I did the night before, and I'd go, yeah, and then that's it. It was done. I didn't have to worry about it anymore. I listened to it. I didn't remember it. It didn't happen. So this idea that I was, you know, constantly worrying about the memories, nah, not really. I was real fortunate. Second time I drank, I had a blackout, and I said, this is what the point is. This is why you do this thing, so that you don't remember. And it's kind of funny to say today, I'm kind of grateful for that. You know, I'm kind of glad that those memories were erased and I don't have to deal with them anymore. Thanks.
That's fine. So I was at my dad's funeral, and my dad was very much a chameleon. He was an alcoholic, and I was in the receiving line, and each person that came through, I had to kind of assess which dad they knew. I was like, is this hunting dad? Is this coaching football dad? Is this church dad? Like, which dad do they know? Because each one got a different, you know, like his hunting buddies did not like get all the Jesus Christ stuff. Like it was like, it was very segmented. And so, and you know, the church people definitely did not know about the lying and stealing money and all that kind of stuff. And I can laugh and joke about it just because it's just a funny way that alcoholism portrays itself. And for me, again, it comes down to secrets and honesty. It becomes a wall between me and other people. My secrets, my dishonesty. It becomes something where I have a secret from you. I have things that you don't know about me. I have things that I'm doing that you don't know about. I have things that I'm saying, like the trash talking I just did about you about an hour ago. And then I have to look at you, and I have to have relations with you, and it becomes hard to do that. And what actually ends up happening is I pop a resentment against you when I'm being dishonest with you. And but that can eventually lead to drinking, because I can be so dishonest with everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can't even have good relationships with people in AA, because I have been so dishonest that I'm so resentful at everybody. And so this comes down to me not living a double life and trying to present Harmony as a whole, like me in all of its ugliness, me in all my humanness. Everybody gets the same me as much as possible. Does that mean that I go to work and I tell them what I'm doing? No, I don't do that. But I still the sponsees get the same harmony. The sponsor gets the same harmony. My friends get the same harmony. Like, I'm not trying to hide all of my stuff anymore. I've got to be 100% real and genuine, and to try to eliminate those inconsistencies, and because it's about honesty. And if there, you know, recently I've had some conflicts with some friends, like I'm looking at my own inventory and my own part, like I am not responsible for those conflicts. Like, I have been 100% honest. I have presented exactly where I am. Like, and the conflict still exists. But and all I can do is just continue to try to give myself 100% exactly how I am. And this all starts with the fifth step. This all starts with being able to confess to another human being exactly who you are. And it doesn't matter if they judge you, because it is about my honesty. It is about me having the best possible relationships with other human beings, and therefore also God. And because I have that, I know that I'm giving this to other people. I also know that God loves me and accepts me exactly how I am, and is always going to be there for me. I do not have to be a perfect human being. That's it on that one.
Thank you. We're going to go to page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone, at peace, at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Glenn.
Yeah, I have to strongly recommend to anybody that's going through this, if you have a sponsor, please, please don't hesitate to share your fifth step with that sponsor. That's one way that sponsor can get to know who you really are so that they can be of maximum service to you. And they also get to the benefit of seeing their own character through you. That's something I didn't realize until I got the chance to do that with another person. I get to see my character through their eyes, through what they've gone through. So it's something that you just won't. I'm glad I didn't go somewhere else besides another alcoholic, because they know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I can't say that I was excited about doing this with my sponsor. I saw him the night before I did my fifth step. He told me a joke, and I'm not going to repeat it, but it kind of loosened things up a little bit, because it made me realize that, like I said before, no matter how bad I thought it was, there's probably somebody out there that's done worse. So I showed up the next day, and I had my so-called, fourth step. It was more like a novel, but and it did. I went through a lot of. I mean, I was trying to share my whole life. Like it said, only thing is that I kind of got lost in the weeds a little bit here and there. But the reality is that I learned through him is I did the best I could at that given time. And the next time I went through the whole full-blown inventory, it came out a lot different. It came out a lot better because I was more focused on what I needed to look at and what I was going to find. So it doesn't matter what comes out. It matters that I did the process. And to me, that part of that process is sharing that with the guy that's going to be helping me, hopefully, the rest of the time. I've had a couple of different sponsors, but for that given time, I don't know that I when I finished the process, like I said, it was like almost 8 hours, and by the time I got through, I was kind of numb. I can't say that I was at peace. I can say that I felt lighter, that something had been lifted from me. And as time went by, I felt that peace of not having to drag that stuff around anymore, because I'd already told somebody. It didn't matter that, I didn't have to hide anything, that he knew. And through that process, he could see who I really was, and he let me know who I really was in his eyes. And that gave me a good insight into me as well. So I did feel with time that connection with my higher power. But if you don't feel that immediately, don't feel like that's unusual, because it wasn't with me. And I told him about it. He said, it happened with me that way too. I felt lighter, but I didn't feel connection completely, because it just had to take a little bit of time. It's like Bill's burning bush. I didn't have one of those. I've had to really do, I've spent 22 years in education in this process, and I'm still learning about me as I go. So, it's not one and done. It's a continuing thing to continue to look and see who I am at a given time, and to do what I need to do to correct things that are going wrong in my life, and ask for the help to be able to correct those things. Because on my own, I don't get to correct them. I can act differently for a little while, but that's not going to last. I have to have that input from a higher power in order for that stuff to be corrected. That's it.
I am completely honored to hear Fifth Steps. I am humbled by them, and I therefore, when I'm talking to my sponsor or I'm talking to my friends and they're taking 10 to 15 minutes, 20 minutes to listen to me or whatever stuff I have going on, I have so much gratitude. Almost every conversation with my sponsor ends with me thanking her three or four times. She does not have to give me her time. She is a very busy woman with two kids and works 60 hours a week. She does not have to give me her time. And she doesn't have to listen to the noise that's going on in my head or help me with it. She doesn't have to do any of that. And technically she does for sobriety, but I am humbled that to get to do this. And one of the things that used to make me feel the worst, and can intermittently throughout my alcoholism and into sobriety, is not being present. Being in my head, being drunk, being whatever, and not being fully present for what was going on in my life or for other people and what they needed. It's like, oh man, I was so I was so wrapped up in that guy that week. I have no idea what happened with anybody else, And I always had a ton of remorse about that. And I so appreciate now being able to the ability to be 100% present and to listen to this stuff. And so if you're new and you're scared about what it's going to be like, I at least for me, it's a very moving. I love bonding with my sponsees and newcomers on this level. And I love being able to show people that they're not that bad. And once we're able to make light of our stuff, it just makes life and sobriety a lot less heavy, and that's what this is talking about here. And what I was talking about when it comes to God, my relationship with God is directly connected to my relationships with others. If I think that I can have judgments and resentments against other people and be bonded with God, it does not work that way. I cannot. I know it's hard to believe as you guys see me now with 20 years of sobriety, but probably for my first 5 years of sobriety, I didn't look people in the eyes. I squirmed constantly, and I always pulled my hair in front of my face, constantly. And that so much so that old-timer women used to point it out to me all the time. They tell me to stand still, and they tell me to look them in the eye, and all sorts of things, just because that, my level of self-confidence and my guilt and my lack of self-acceptance, I couldn't even look people in the eye. And this is one of the promises of the fifth step, is that I will have ease with myself. I will feel less afraid of other people. I will feel close to God. And I love being on the broad highway with other alcoholics and to hear this stuff. And through some of the darkest times in my sobriety, those girls coming to me with this stuff, it has saved my life. It has made me feel grateful for everything that I've been given, when even just 5 minutes before I was not grateful. I was not at all grateful. I was like, oh, thank God you called, because now I can go back to being grateful and happy again. Anyway, thanks.
And still on 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand?
I don't know about the rest of you guys, but the first time I went through this, an hour seemed like an eternity. I mean, oh my goodness. You know, I was sitting there tapping my foot wondering, when is this going to be over? Because, I mean, how long does it take to look at the first five propositions? You know, did I put enough? Yes. Did I do this? Yes. I didn't understand the necessity of what they were asking me to do. And as I've processed, I've gone through the process of inventory on smaller things or individual things, I still do this. You know, it tells me to go home after I've done an inventory, so I still do this. And reflect on what I've found. Have I done this properly? Is there anything that I didn't highlight? Is there something that may have gotten by me? So I don't just do this on a full-blown inventory, you know, where I go through, you know, all of the inventories, all three of the inventories of resentment. You know, if I'm having a problem with my brother, which I did have for a long time, you know, I even when I come to a conclusion on that and I've shared with my sponsor what I found, I still go home and I do this 1 hour reflection to make sure that I'm solid with what I found and what I understand about the situation as it's presented itself now. So again, there's no cutting corners. There really isn't. If I don't do this, then I'm rounding that corner or not stopping at the stop sign, whatever. I'm avoiding doing what is necessary to be able to recover properly from whatever it is I'm having the problem with. So now when I go, I treat this more as a meditation time. You know, I go back and I take the quiet time to really reflect back on it and to answer these questions one at a time and consider the answers and consider the questions. It gives me the opportunity in the fourth step to answer a bunch of questions as well. If I pay attention, those questions are there all along. You know, I've somebody I'm real, real good friends with, he said, you know, the book isn't full of answers, it's full of questions. You get to find the answers. You know, that's what's really key, because I never realized that until I heard that from him. I didn't get it. I just didn't get it. So, again, there are questions here that I need to consider, and I need to consider them with the weight that they should have. And today I do that. The first time around, like I said, the inventory was amazingly long, and this process was amazingly brutal. Today, the inventory is a lot more concise and to the point, and this process is very, very enlightening and wonderful. And that's part of the growing up process that I've gone through, I think. Thanks.
Glenn is one of my spiritual giants. I know he laughs at it, but I there are people that you always need people ahead of you and people behind you in this program. And when you say stuff, I listen. Anyway, I like to stay busy. I like to be busy, 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 busy. I'm like, oh, I have a spare half hour. I think I'll bake a cake. Like, I do not like to slow down. And I cannot hear God, and I cannot hear my conscience at all if I'm living like that. And my sponsors over the years have constantly reminded me to thin out my schedule, to slow down so that I can hear God and that I can hear conscience and I can do inventory. And that's what this is I've got to take the time to look at the fact, did I miss anything? Is there anything that keeps coming up in my mind that makes my gut do a flip that I didn't tell my sponsor? Is there anything that I didn't tell the whole truth about? Or how am I feeling and after just telling a woman about all of this? And I'll tell you how I felt. I felt bad. I felt I did not like looking at all those defects in black and white. Like I said, it was humiliating. And when I really sit there and I look at it in black and white and talk to my higher power about it, then, like, yes, I want those things gone. I want those things gone. I want to be better. And but I can stay so busy that I never feel that way. I can. I am fine. I've got this. Like I do not need you, and I do not need God at all.
Thank you. All right, so we're going to move on to step 6 and 7, and it only took me a couple of decades to figure out that they are on page 76. So, step 6. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing.
Okay. It's kind of funny that these two steps are like two paragraphs, and that's it. And at one time I thought, well, Bill did that so that we had to have somebody explain it to us because I didn't understand it and I didn't get it. To be honest with you, I didn't get it until probably 10 years ago. It took me that long to come to understand what this is all about. And fortunately, I got a sponsor who likes to pound on the 7th step. So that means the 6 and 7 are constantly in my life. But the idea of answering that question, you know, am I completely ready? I don't know that I have ever been completely ready to have a character defect removed. I want to think that I am, but there's always that little bit of doubt in the background. And I think that's why I constantly get the opportunity to revisit these things. And thank goodness my sponsor told me, the one I have now, he said, what we want to do is what we hope for is that they get toned down enough to where you can live a productive life. And if they're not removed, that at least you have somewhere to go to help get them toned back down again. And that was a great help to me, because I was constantly beating myself up because I was acting out and I was doing this, I was doing that, you know, just brutal. And the fact is that I was getting back into that driver's seat, and I was, you know, playing God again about what was going on with Glenn, and that's no longer my purview. I have to stay out of that. So I don't get to judge how badly I'm doing. I get to find out what's in there and what's causing that, and then I get to ask for help to have it removed. So I have to keep that in mind. You know, the things that I've admitted, says, have God remove all these things I've admitted that are objectionable. First time through, I didn't find a whole lot of objectionable stuff. And again, as the education has progressed, I've found more and more objectionable stuff, because unfortunately, this road of sobriety narrows as you get further down, and things I used to be able to do and just kind of laugh off, I no longer can, because I actually see people's eyes when I do these things. And that is unbelievably brutal to my heart. It kills me to see their reactions now when I'm mean to somebody. When oh, I'm just joking. No, I'm not. I'm trying to hurt you. I'm not trying to joke at you. I'm trying to hurt your feelings. That's the honesty that I have to remember, you know, because I'm looking at you and you're coming back at me with that look, you know, and that's not what I was in, whether I intended it or not, that's not what I want. I don't want that in my life anymore. I don't need that in my life anymore. So I have to be constantly in contact with my higher power to help tone this stuff down so that I don't act the way I don't want to be. I have to be in touch with my higher power so that I have the help that I need to be different today. like I said, I can act different for a little while, but I can't keep that up. There's no way that I can keep that up, so I have to have help. No different, really, than I can keep myself from drinking. I never have been able to do that. And the fact that I haven't drank in this length of time, something acted in my life besides me. And that same power will act in my life with these twists of character that I have if I just open up enough to do it. Thanks.
This is definitely a process that comes out of inventory. What happens for me is I have problems in my life, things that cause problems. And that's how I see what my character defects are. That there's a problem, somebody I'm mad at, I have to do inventory, and then I see, oh, there's that character defect. Like, I got mad at my boss because I got in trouble for not getting to work on time. And so, what was I doing? Well, I was out too late at night trying to create a situation where I get to interact with the boy that I have a crush on. Oh, okay. Well, how can you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning if you are running around doing those things? You have responsibilities. You have to be at work on time. And so all of that comes out in black and white through the inventory process. And it's not me deciding what is objectionable. It is God, these things become illuminated in my life because God says, this needs to go. This is causing problems. This is causing problems with you and the people in your life. I need you to be of service. I need you to do things. Knock it off, you know? And this is how I eliminate self-will from my life. Is to start to see how it is that my defects and my will are corroding everything and preventing me from doing the things that God would have me do. And so, yes, when the question then comes, am I willing to do that? Am I willing to do God's will? Am I willing to set my alarm 20 minutes earlier and so that I can get to work on time? And that's what step six is all about for me is, and with enough pain, yes, I will become willing, but there are still things where I defiance wells up in me. Absolutely not. I am not doing that. I don't care, God. I really don't. You know, I don't care, sponsor. I'm not doing that. And, I believe that defiance is deadly. I know for me that nothing gets me sicker and separates me from God faster than defiance about my character defects and the stuff that I don't want to do. And it scares me now because it wells up so much and I build up such a resistance that I want to stay in the middle road and keep some of that humility and that willingness to do what God's will is in my life and not what Harmony's will is.
Thanks. All right, and page 76. When ready, we say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven.
Excuse me. Excuse me. The second time I went through through the process all the way through and got to this this step, my sponsor said, I want you to either use this prayer or write your own, and I want you to say it every day. And I had a hard time going through the steps the second time because I was almost 9 years sober. I didn't think it was entirely fair that I had to do it again. And I resisted it. It took me 6 months to get to this point from step one to step seven. So I said no. And he said, okay, call me tomorrow. So I called him tomorrow. I said, have you written the prayer? I said, no. And so this went on for about 2 weeks, and he said, "What seems to be your problem?" I said, "I don't think it's entirely necessary for me to do this," or yada, yada, yada. And he started laughing at me. And I went, "Oh, no. No, we're not having this." And I said, so I got bent out of shape. I started yelling at him. And the more I yelled, the more he laughed. He was just having a great time. And finally, I had this moment of clarity, and I heard me. I heard what I was doing. And Harmony just mentioned defiance. I mean, I love being defiant. I've been defiant my whole life. You know, it's just something that is natural with me. And I realized at that point that I had to stop doing that. I had to make that effort to swallow my pride and not do that. You know, take instruction from somebody and do it. Follow through with it. So I did. I followed through with it, and guess what? It didn't take me but another couple of weeks to get all the way to 12. I mean, it's unbelievable how that my ego had gotten so entrenched again and was so ruling my life. And that's a character defect. That's a problem in my life that I wasn't willing to look at. So when I asked my higher power to take all of me, the good and the bad, again, like Harmony said, and she thinks I'm the only one that has good things to say, she also said, you know, I don't get to choose what's good and bad. You know, God gets to have all of me. And when it's time to have something removed, it'll be blatantly obvious, because it'll be very painful for me to have that going on in my life. And it has proven so. It has. And it has blocked me from being useful, because when I start acting the way I act and being defiant, I start pushing people away. And that's not good for me today. I can't be pushing people away. My sponsor is, like I said, he's really a hound on this seventh step. He's constantly giving me a hard time about it. You know, hey, you know, have you looked at this character defect that's flaring on you? Well, no. He said, well, maybe it's time that you did. If it's not working for you, maybe you need to look at it. And I hate that, because he's right. He's always right. Even if I tell him he's not right, he's always right. Because eventually I'm going to come to the understanding that what he's telling me is truth. It's the truth. And the truth is always right. So I have to go back and start looking at this again. One of the things I've learned, when I hit that defiance, it's a first step problem. I've all of a sudden decided I'm in charge again, and then I have to go back to the first step and start working my way back through. And then when I get to this again, then I'm ready to have it removed. I'm ready to ask God to take me again, and have that part of me removed. Whether it happens or not, at least I've gone through the process and I'm aware. You know, they talk about being aware of what you're doing and who you are. That's one of the biggest skills that I've learned in AA, is to be aware. You know, be where I am at any given time, be in the moment. But that means being aware of what's going on with me. You know, not what's going on out here, what's going on in here. That's the big thing. And if I try to stay there, then I have a lot more productive and a lot calmer life than I've ever had in my life, in my existence. So it's real important to stay aware of what's going on. Thanks.
So if I get down on my knees and I say the seven-step prayer, and then I get up and I call Mr. Wrong or send him a text, I'm not willing. I am a six and seven step thumper. I believe that the quality of my sobriety is dependent on on my practice of six and seven, and the quality of my relationships. But it's not about being perfect. And I hope that gives you hope if you're new. God does not expect me to be perfect. Other AAs don't expect me to be perfect. thank God. I am not perfect at all, and I still have a lot of character defects that can be ugly at times. And one of my favorite lines is in the big book is that God does not make too hard of terms with those who seek him, and I found that to be the case with my defects. He does not expect me to be perfect. He does not expect me to be someone that I'm not. And but at the same time, like, I don't get to use progress not to perfection to keep doing whatever the hell I want. I have to, over and over again, and have had to in my sobriety, to come back to willingness of being willing to do what God's will is for me. And if these things are being illuminated in my life and I'm having conflict with people and people are coming to me and saying, hey, you know what, you hurt my feelings, or hey, you know what, like, you mouthed off again, or whatever it is. And I have to, I have found that for my own well-being and in order to minimize the damage, I have to keep looking at this stuff. And when I am willing and I get down on my knees and I say these prayers, I've had miracles happen in my life. I've had character defects that have just been completely eliminated, problems that are gone. You know, one of them was that I used to struggle with judging my mom all the time, like all the time. Like, and I can tell you that she lives in my house now, and the judgments that I have of her are few and far between. And because of that, she can live in my house and we don't go to blows. You know what I mean? Like, there's been so many things like that. In my first few years of sobriety, I used to lose my keys, my purse, or something like 3 times a week. So much so that I had a locksmith in the program on my speed dial. Like, I'd just be like, hey, can you come let me back into my apartment because I can't get it together, you know? And all of the, a lot of things have, of these things that I used to struggle with, like even 5 years ago, they're gone. They're gone. And it's not because I'm great. It's not because I waved a magic wand. It's because I became willing to do things differently because of pain and because of hurting other people. And once I started doing things differently and I started taking different actions, God also gave me the power to do that. Like, he met me more than halfway in eliminating some of this stuff, you know, like, it is always hard at first not to pick up the phone when Mr. Wrong is calling. It is hard. But after 2 weeks, it won't be that hard, I promise you. It won't, you know? And it's just, and God started to eliminate some of those so intense feelings, but I love him, I'm never going to be able to live without him! Like that, like, eventually God got that stuff changes. And you start to see people for what they really are, and you, like, those feelings will not be that intense. And all you have to do is take the actions, and the feelings will follow. And there have been things that I have been very unwilling to give up, so then my prayer becomes, God, help me be willing. And usually these days the motivating factor is not as much about me anymore. That yes, I still worry about myself and I'm very self-centered, but I the thing that gets me is I hate hurting other people. I just did not want to do that anymore. And so I become very willing to not behave like that anymore. So it's been a great meeting. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you both for sharing. These baskets, we're going to pass the seventh tradition. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. While the basket's going around, are there any AA-related announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining this home group, please see one of us. Home group members, raise your hand. Woo-hoo. All right, the new person is the most important person in the room. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce themselves by their first name so we can get to know you? Wow, not a one. Let's see, we've got some literature to my left. The books are at cost, and the pamphlets and meeting lists are free. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be up at the table, and also Glenn and Harmony will be up after the meeting. And please feel free to come up and ask questions and thank them for sharing. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and still stay well away from the front doors of the church, kind of over by the bike racks. Our meetings and our audio recordings are on, all meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And we're going to thank the panel one more time. Thanks to all who participated, and after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight, or the three steps discussed tonight, at the meeting after the meeting, and we go to Plaza del Sol, which is on 22nd and Colonial, a little Mexican taqueria, sort of. Anyway, would someone like to read the last two paragraphs? David is going to read the last two paragraphs.
Hey, David. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. And obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, and we close with the Lord's Prayer. Thank you.